I will now turn it over to Dr. Heather Henry, who is the Program Administrator for the Superfund Research Program.
Thank you, Sarah. I will advance to the next slide. There we go. Great. Okay. So here we show the outline of today's webinar. We're going to start with our director, Dr. William Sook, who's going to provide a welcome and then some context to today's webinar. And then we'll hear from program review and grant management staff outlining the general information about the Superfund P42 RFA. Finally, we'll have a question and answer session. You are welcome to submit your questions at any point throughout the webinar, but we're going to go through those questions at the end. And many of you may want to know the archive of this webinar, as well as all the questions and answers, will be posted on the RFA website, which is found on the SRP Funding Opportunities webpage. So links are found on the right pane of the webinar window, and please note that we are also available offline. So if we don't get to your question today, we'll certainly follow up with you after the webinar. So at this point, I will turn it over to Dr. William Sook, the director of the Superfund Research Program, for some opening remarks. Dr. Sook?
Thank you, Heather. Can I hope everybody hear me? So next slide, please. There we go. This slide shows the SRP legislation, which is under the Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act, SARA, of 1986. It allows NIEHS the flexibility to create a university-based grants program, in this case a CEDIS program, using the unique mechanism, which is what we're talking about, the P42, to conduct scientific research to address a wide array of scientific uncertainties facing the National Superfund program. The scope of the SRP centers is taken directly from the Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act, and includes, and you can see them here, advancing techniques for the detection, assessment, and evaluation of the effects on human health of hazardous substances, methods to assess the risks to human health presented by hazardous substances, methods and technologies to detect hazardous substances in the environment, and the last one is very unique to NIH and NIEHS, basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances. The complex problems related to sites impacted by hazardous substances requires the expertise of multiple biomedical and environmental science and engineering disciplines. If you notice, I was emphasizing the word hazardous substances, which gives us, as an institute of NIH, a much broader mandate, and also an indication that we are, when you read the legislation, that it's not site-specific. So we have a much broader mandate, even though we have these four mandates to hang our hat on. Next slide, please. Thank you. So this, my bad. Okay. In addition to our mandates, our program is guided by our strategic plan. We've had a number of strategic plans over the years, and we've done one just recently. The plan stresses our continued dedication to program relevance and identifies our key stakeholders as the Superfund programs of the US EPA and ATSDR, as well as other entities responsible for sites impacted by hazardous substances, and they are listed here, and the communities living near these sites. We also highlight the importance of the team integration for center as a way for programs research to achieve impact and promote innovation. So in today's presentations, I encourage you to consider how to design meritorious scientific studies and centers that are relevant to key stakeholders that will make an impact to reducing exposure to hazardous substances and will bring innovation to the practice of managing hazardous substances. I need to remind you that this is an NIH program, and all applications will undergo the rigorous NIH peer review process. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Heather and the others to go from there. Okay? Thank you for your time and your patience, and looking forward to your questions. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Bill. I also wanted to mention that while we try to cover most of the aspects of the RFA in this presentation, this is by no means all of the information that is provided in our RFA. And so it's really important that you read the entire RFA, look over the resources that we provide on our website. For example, there's a suggested research and activities, tips for applicants, and additional resources links. Again, this webinar presentation is meant to complement the RFA and address your questions, but we will not have time to go over the entire extensive RFA in detail. So to begin, the goal of the SRP Center is to improve public health by supporting integrated multidisciplinary research. In addition, SRP-funded research is expected to provide fundamentally sound science while providing data, information, and knowledge to inform the risk assessment and remediation management processes. Therefore, investigators should seek input from stakeholders during the application development, and to identify critical issues for which fundamental science is needed. Also, the complex problems related to sites impacted by hazardous substances requires the expertise of multiple biomedical and environmental science and engineering disciplines. Applicants responding to this RFA are expected to design a center that integrates biomedical science with environmental science and engineering. Before we continue, I also want to reiterate the importance of reaching out to SRP staff if you are considering applying to this RFA. It's best to contact us early in the process to ensure that you will be responsive to this RFA. We know it's a lot of work to put together one of these applications, and we want you to be successful in this endeavor. And so let's talk about key dates that are listed in the RFA. Open date is January 15th. The letter of intent date is also January 15th, 2021. Laura will talk a little bit more about that. The application due date is February 15th from 2021 at 5 p.m. Scientific review will occur around July. Advisory council will be in January, and the latest start date as listed in the RFA the earliest start date as listed in the RFA is April 2022. Now I'll talk a little bit about the center structure. The SRP Center grants support problem-based, solution-oriented research centers that consist of multiple integrated projects representing both biomedical and environmental science disciplines. The center cores are tasked with administrative, which includes research translation, data management and analysis, community engagement, training coordination, and research support functions. Centers should demonstrate evidence that interaction between projects and cores is necessary in order to resolve a problem that the center proposes. Furthermore, integration and interaction should be demonstrated between the biomedical, environmental science, and engineering projects as they contribute to the center's goals. In addition, the research emanating from the center and the interaction between the projects and cores should be incorporated into sustainable solutions that take into account environmental, social, and economic issues. SRP also firmly supports transdisciplinary research, such as adapting technologies and approaches from one field and applying them to other fields in order to solve challenging environmental health problems. Forward-thinking or anticipatory research is also critical to identify and address future stakeholder needs. The next, let's talk a little bit more about some of the details of the RFA, specifically the scope of the center grant. There is a section of the RFA called Scope of the Center Grant, and I'm going to outline that here. So the scope of the SRP Center is defined by its mandates, which are again listed here, and Dr. Silk mentioned them earlier. Research and supporting activities under this FOA may utilize a variety of approaches to achieve SRP mandates. Please carefully review the RFA and the suggested research topics and activities document and our other website resources for ideas on how you can fulfill the mandates of the SRP. It's also important that you review the SRP strategic plan mentioned previously, For information on how a center application should include within its scope, the relevance to Superfund, impact stakeholders, and innovation, which should be transdisciplinary and paradigm shifting. It's also important to note that the SRP is not a site-specific program. However, in the most broad sense, hazardous substances found at Superfund sites are relevant to the SRP. These substances would include hazardous substances found at Superfund sites. You can also look into the CERCLA priority list compounds. The link is provided here. And other substances, including but not limited to the hazardous breakdown products of the aforementioned substances, as well as information listed in the additional resources for hazardous substances, including emerging contaminants that have been suggested by our sister agencies, EPA and ATSDR, as a target for study. When you are looking for topics for your center application, it's important to also consider programmatic balance. This is something that we also pay attention to when deciding which centers to ultimately support. So by programmatic balance, we mean who are we already funding, what science are we already funding. And so you can find that out by looking into the Who We Fund website to find out current and previously funded grants. You can also look for topics in the suggested research topics and activities, which contains information about high priority areas for SRP stakeholders. And finally, in the broadest sense, the center should demonstrate a clear link to Superfund. Okay, so now we're going to dig into the components. This pie chart depicts what the application should consist of with the following components. Biomedical research projects, 2 minimum are required. Environmental science and engineering research projects are required, 2 minimum. Administrative core, which includes research translation, is required. The data management and analysis core is required. The community engagement core is required. Research experience and training coordination core is required. And then centers also have the option to include research support cores. Applications must successfully meet these minimum requirements without exceeding a total number of 11 projects and cores. And applicants may budget up to $1.75 million a year of direct costs for up to 5 years. I'm going to say a little bit more about some of the budget limitations within that $1.7 million direct cost. So as noted in the RFA, the total combined direct cost allocation to the admin, CEC, RETC, cannot exceed 20% of the total center budget. The other 80% should be comprised of the project DMEC and optional research support course. And so now we're going to go through the parts of the RFA. The first of these is the overall component. So for the overall component, applicants should include a description of the problems and the objectives and the goals being addressed by the overall center. For example, how the center plans to target problems related to health effects, risk, detection, and or remediation of hazardous substances. Your project description, essentially the abstract, should be an overall indication of the proposed science and what the center proposes to accomplish. The description should include which hazardous substances are being evaluated, how they are relevant to SRP and to the Superfund, any study sites, research approaches, model organisms, disease pathways, etc. Your overall research strategy should highlight aspects of the application that are particularly innovative or paradigm shifting. It should be clear how the components of the center will interact to solve the target problems and the role of each project and core in contributing to resolving the problems stated in the application. The primary activities of the core should also be integrated into the description. The benefits of the center in terms of improving public health should also be included. In addition, each overall center aim should be supported by a brief description of how that aim will be accomplished through interactions of projects and cores. The research team expertise to accomplish the goals, the innovation of the science, and the strength of the experimental approaches and the research environment should all be described. Centers should detail the integration between project and cores with a focus on how the overall center is greater than the sum of its parts. As such, the following subjects subsections are recommended in the overall component, that being significance and relevance to SRP mandates and Superfund, research team, innovation, approach, environment, and center integration. So please refer to the RFA for additional information on the overall description for the center. Okay, so another thing we wanted to be sure you were aware of, other attachments. So there are several other attachments that should be included with the overall component to aid in the review of applications. Specific descriptions are provided for each of these attachments in the RFA. New to the RFA this year is the table of stakeholders and field sites. In addition, the central organizational structure, table of integration with center, table of research support core and DMAC utilization, table of changes to projects and cores, which is applicable to renewal submission applications, as well as table of research approaches. I would also like to emphasize the instructions for the overall center resource sharing plan. In this current RFA, you are asked to include with the resource sharing plan for the overall component a summary of the center data management and analysis. This is a general description of the types of data expected to be generated from the center, a synopsis of proposed data management sharing activities, and information included in this section should briefly summarize but not duplicate the data management plans for the component sections of the application. However, applicants are encouraged to cross-reference the data management and analysis core component as well as project and core resource sharing plans for additional details about data management and analysis. And I did want to show that there is some help for you with these tables. We do include in our tips for applicants page examples of what the tables, what you might go by for your tables. So these are the tables again that I mentioned in the prior slide. And again, there is a new one. That's the table of stakeholders and field sites. And again, these are all found on the tips for applicants page. These are really helpful for reviewers, so we're very appreciative that applicants take time to put these together. I will now pass it off to Danielle, who will speak about the components of the P42 application, the projects and cores. Danielle?
Thanks, Heather. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Great, okay. So first we're going to focus, as Heather said, on the research project. As you may have seen in the RFA, the Center's research project, a maximum of six, should emphasize a balance of basic and applied research that contributes to the problem-based, solution-oriented goals or goals of the center. The center's central problems should be addressed by the contributions of these projects, and each project should have the necessary biomedical and or environmental science and engineering expertise to address the center's central problem theme. So let's start with the biomedical research project. So as noted in the RFA, there's a minimum of two, a max of four biomedical projects are required and should address biomedical or human health related implications of hazardous substances. We provide you here with a list of topics in the RFA and in our suggested research and activities document that would qualify for biomedical project topics. And you see the link here in the slide. So a minimum of two, a max of four, environmental science and engineering projects are required and should address environmental science or engineering implications of hazardous substances. These projects are integral to the protection of human health through predicting, detecting, and preventing exposures. Again, we provide suggestions in the RFA and in that suggested research and activities document for topics. I'll be providing some additional information about the requirement about the environmental science and engineering projects in the next slide. But for now, we're going to focus on what both types of projects require. So for both types of projects, each of the research projects should be standalone and all should be hypothesis-driven or product-oriented research. Each project should also clearly contribute to the overall center objective, providing a clear step towards identifying solutions to the problem-solving goals of the center. Each project should relate to the SRP mandate, And as Dr. Stook mentioned, health does include health effects, risk detection, and or remediation of hazardous substances. And they should also draw connections and relevance to Superfund as appropriate. So please make sure to include which hazardous substances are being evaluated, the research approaches, and the exposure context as appropriate. Include information about the model organisms or biological systems, disease pathways, environmental media, et cetera, as well as study sites if they're applicable. In addition, the project should highlight aspects of the application that are innovative, paradigm shifting, and or gap filling. Plans for engaging stakeholders or communities should also be included if they are applicable. It's also important to highlight the significance of the research project, the expertise of the research team, the innovation of the science, the details of their experimental approach, that includes rationale for the methodology, the strength of the research environment, a timeline for project completion, as well as a description of how the project contributes to the overall SRP center. So as such, the following subsections are recommended. That includes significance and relevance to SRP mandates and Superfund, investigators, innovation, approach, environment, and center integration. It's also important to explain how the project advances knowledge or provides resources and technologies that could be utilized to improve human health, risk assessment, or improve the quality of the environment, and how the project provides rigorous scientific data that might be used for effective decision-making by stakeholders. Research facility and institutional support, that includes equipment, physical resources, and other features that support and facilitate collaborative and multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary research approaches should also be included. Applicants should also include a description called the relation to the overall center that clearly states the relevance of the project to the goals of the overall center and how this project integrates with other projects and cores. So as we mentioned in the RFA, collaborative aims are allowed and are a good way to showcase integration between projects and cores. But no, collaborative aims are not required. And then you may also refer to your table of integration with the center attachment, which was just discussed by Heather in the overall component. You can see this, you can look at the overall section, other attachments, for where that table of integration should be placed. Applicants are also required to comply with the instructions for the resource sharing plans as provided in the SF-424 application guide. Projects are also expected to include within their data sharing plan a data management plan and an investigator-initiated research plan. The data management plan should be cross-referenced in the data management and analysis core, so be sure to work with your DMAC leader and your research translation coordinator on this section. And the investigator-initiated research research translation plan should also be cross-referenced in the administrative core's research translation function. A description and checklist of a data management plan and examples of the investigator-initiated research translation activities are provided for reference in the suggested research and activities document. So next slide, please. So we've also added further guidance to the environmental science and engineering projects in this current RFA. So as you all know, the SRP recognizes the importance of new environmental science and engineering approaches to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances in the environment. So fostering the development of novel remediation approaches through designing new remediation platforms or assessing the efficacy of these platforms is an important contribution to accelerating the cleanup of hazardous substances and preventing exposures. So for this reason, all applicants are required in this RFA to include at least one environmental science and engineering project that supports SRP's fourth mandate, which is basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances. So for more information on how to develop one of these projects, make sure that you review the RFA section titled Scope of the SRP Center Grant, and also review our suggested research and activities document, which lists some topics that are eligible to meet the requirements of Mandate 4. And as always, if you have any questions about whether or not your project qualifies, please reach out to us, the SRP staff, to ensure that your project is responsive to the RFA. Next slide, please. Okay, so these are just some tips as you put together your projects. So So for example, centers should be very judicious in assembling their research projects. A center should, with projects, keep a clear focus and try not to do too much. Include projects with the most solid connection to the center's problem-solving theme. Also, please note that the projects are often considered similar to an NIH R01 grant and are typically written in an R01 style. So for those of you that might not be familiar with this type of grant, that is the investigator-initiated NIH grant. Please don't forget to justify your use of model organisms. So that includes study numbers, such as any animals that you plan on using, or studies involving human subjects, the dose that's being considered, as well as exposure relevance. Also, please keep in mind that we are still in lean time, so you may want to consider coming in under budget as well as under the 11 component limit. This is especially true for new center proposals. Another tip is to be sure to cross-reference interactions between projects and cores, and these interactions should be consistent throughout. You can refer to your table of integration with the center and in the overall component to highlight those interactions. Also, please try to avoid jargon, especially with your titles and abstracts and summaries. Don't assume that all the reviewers will be well-versed in your project. Only the reviewers assigned to your project will be well-versed. Therefore, P42 reviewers have broad expertise, so consider writing your abstracts and titles for a general audience. Write your specific aims for technical experts. And don't forget to define your abbreviations. And we highly encourage you to visit the NIH website on plain language. The RFA also has some suggestions for any projects that are community-based, and so please look out for that. And so now I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Michelle Heacock, and she will be covering the admin, the administrative core, and the DMAT cores within our P42 Center RFA. So, Michelle?
Thank you, Danielle. Just a sound check. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great, thank you. So I'll just take you through the next three slides, two on the DMAC, and or two on the admin core and one on the DMAC. So we'll start with administrative core. This is a required component in the P42 application. The administrative core, this includes the center director, the research translation coordinator, center administrator. They provide the leadership, guidance to ensure the synthesis of findings and activities from each, from the research projects and cores are used towards addressing the central problem objective that's proposed by the center. The application should include a description of the lines of communication among the center administrator, the research translation coordinator, and the center project and core leaders. There should also be a description of the mechanisms to be used to encourage and ensure the integration and interaction between the biomedical and environmental science and engineering projects. It also should have a plan for coordinating data sharing and analysis activities, integration of cross-disciplinary research, overseeing of fiscal and resource management, and providing quality management. The core should describe a strategy for personnel management changes and, if applicable, succession plans. The core should also provide points of contact for regular SRP-hosted conference calls or webinars, and these are on research translation, community engagement, which is typically lumped together, and the data management and analysis core calls. In addition, all applicants are required to include research translation as part of the administrative core's functions. This will help to facilitate and coordination and coordinate communication of the results, accomplishments, and implications of the center's research to stakeholders, including NIHS staff, to other SRP centers, and other applicable stakeholders in a context that makes the research applicable to the target audience. As you might recall in previous RFAs, we've had a separate research translation core. Although research translation is now contained in the administrative core, so this is the second RFA that we've moved it into the administrative core. The SRP is still committed to fostering translation of scientific accomplishments to support its mandates. The definition of research translation remains the same as you may have seen in previous RFAs, and that's communicating and facilitating the use of research findings emanating from the center in a manner that's most appropriate for the application and the advancement of research objectives. So therefore, the administrative core should have a description for a plan for following the research translation objectives which are communicating with SRP, within SRP and to SRP staff, partnership with government agencies, technology transfer, information dissemination to other end users. Additionally, the administrative corps should promote investigated-initiated research translation. Therefore, the administrative corps has a critical role in assisting project and core leaders in translating their research outcomes and activities to appropriate audience and ensuring the accurate and timely use of products and sharing of findings. The administrative corps will be responsible for ensuring that updates are made to the optional data SRP data collection tool and the NIH career track database. And they should designate points of contact responsible for reporting this information, as well as a plan for the frequency of reporting. A point of contact should be indicated in the research strategy section for the regular SRP research translation community engagement calls, as well as the data management and analysis core conference calls webinars. Examples of research translation and initiated research translation activities are provided in the suggested research and activity documents. You can find that on the website, and we also have it linked here on the towards the bottom of the slide. The SRP data collection tool allows grantees to inform SRP staff of center activities such as webinars, meetings, interactions with stakeholders, trainee investigator awards, news articles, and publications. Links to both the data collection tool and the NIH career track database are at the bottom of the slide. And just a quick reminder that permission to use the career track database is only provided after an award is made. Next slide, please. To also aid the center in achieving its goals, the administrative corps is required to establish an external advisory committee, or EAC, and this provides guidance to the center director in the following areas. So the scientific merit of the research and productivity, the relevance and importance of the individual components to the goals of the center, the integration of research across disciplines, the effectiveness of data sharing and integration, activities in linking projects within the center, the effectiveness of research translation functions in linking projects to stakeholders, the appropriateness of community engagement and training activities, and discussion of projects that should be continued, modified, or discontinued, and strategy for making changes to projects. The composition of the EAC should reflect the goals of the center and should include appropriate scientific expertise and appropriate stakeholders. This may include representatives from the EPA, ATSDR, industry, or community organizations as examples. All applicants should list the anticipated target areas of expertise for the EAC members. New applicants should not list names of anticipated EAC members unless they're providing input into the design of the application. Finally, I wanted to mention that the budget for the administrative corps is not to exceed $150,000 direct cost, and the center director must commit a minimum of 1.8 person months. Next slide. Now we're going to move to the Data Management and Analysis Corps, or the DMAC. I want to mention that the RFA contains a great deal of information about this corps. And since this is fairly new, this is the second time it's been required, it's important that you read the RFA carefully. But unfortunately, due to time, I can only just go through the major highlights of this corps. So why did we create this corps? We acknowledge that integration of data from a broad range of scientific disciplines is critical to understanding and breaking the link between exposures and disease. Data represent important research products, and attention is needed to provide stewardship of that data and treat research as an asset. The primary purpose of the DMAC is to support the management and integration of data assets across the center. In addition, the DMAC should support and facilitate the management of data assets, irrespective of the data set size. The DMAC should also establish, coordinate, and monitor processes for data analysis and work closely with the project core and core leaders to ensure high-quality data throughout the entire life cycle of the data. The DMAC also has a coordinating role to work with the project and core leaders to identify opportunities for integrating project and core-generated data with other existing data sets. The DMAC should also foster data sharing and interoperability and data quality assurance and quality control. The DMACC is also essential for helping enable interoperability of data between biomedical and environmental science and engineering projects. And in this way, this helps accelerate the impact of the center's research. The specific aim section should also contain, the core should include its specific objectives and goals in their comprehensive data management, including coordination with projects and cores, fostering data sharing and interoperability, data quality assurance and quality control. The specific aim section should also contain a brief statement about how the core integrates with each of the research projects and cores and how it helps to achieve the center's goals. The DMACC may also include additional functionality such as biostatistics, bioinformatics, GIS, and computational modeling, for example. These additional functionalities, they're optional, and they shouldn't detract from the overall goal of the DMACC and the responsibilities of this core. While it's not expected for the DMACC to create a repository for the center's data, the core should be familiar with databases that can be used to deposit data and should develop a plan for project and core members to have access and use the data generated from the center with appropriate ethical controls in place. The DMACC should also designate a point of contact to inform SRP staff of data set deposition, and this can be done through the data collection tool that I just told you about in the previous slide. A point of contact should also be provided for those regular data management and analysis conference calls. We also want to mention that this is the second time that the data management and analysis core has been required. So for renewal applications, if you're a renewal application, you may not have had a data management and analysis core. But if you've had a research support core with data management and analysis facilities previously, it's permissible to include as part of the DMACC research strategy a summary of activities that were carried out preceding during the preceding performance period, including information on core utilization by the individual projects and or cores. For renewal applicants without previous DMACC functions or facilities, this section is simply not applicable. We also provide you some links regarding data shared policies and resources, and you're highly encouraged to review these as you put this core together. I'm now going to turn this over to Brittany Trottier, who's going to take you through the research support and community engagement cores.
Thanks, Michelle. So now on to the community engagement core, which is also a required core. So the purpose of the community engagement core is to ensure bidirectional communication between the core and the community and to direct best practices and activities in community engagement for prevention and intervention, thereby providing potential solutions to communities to reduce or mitigate the impact of hazardous substance exposure. Please recall that the SRP refers to prevention and intervention as basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount and toxicity of hazardous substances. Through exposure prevention and intervention, the CEC empowers impacted communities to be full participants in decisions to reduce the amount and toxicity of the hazardous substances, whether it's in their homes, schools, community, and their environment. The CEC activity should also complement the research strengths and problem-solving goals of the center. The CEC should give a clear indication about which community or communities are planned for partnerships, as well as which hazardous substances are impacting the community or communities. Applicants should highlight specific activities and innovative plans for engaging the community in appropriate prevention and intervention activities, all the while tailored to fit the overall goals of the center and complement the research. So the CEC may work in partnership with the community or community-serving organizations such as local government groups, tribal councils, community service groups focused on educating the community about local issues, or non-governmental organizations working closely with the community. In addition, the CEC may propose the development of prevention or intervention activities for the economically disadvantaged and environmental justice communities, as these groups are frequently impacted by hazardous substances. Like I said before, the CEC should be designed to fit within the theme of the center. It should include a timeline for activities with milestones, a plan to measure and verify outcomes, for example, with using a logic model, approach and methodology for surveys and or sample collection, for example, biological monitoring, the seafood or plant tissue and environmental media, and a process to guarantee effective bidirectional exchange between the community engagement core and the community of their needs, recommendations, and results. A point of contact should be indicated in the research strategy section for the regular SRP research translation and community engagement core conference calls. Appropriate activities of the CEC may include capacity building, developing tools or resources to enhance the knowledge of exposures in the target community. In some cases, the CECs may choose to but are not required to include biological or environmental sample collection as part of their prevention and intervention activities. I would like to emphasize that CECs proposing to collect biological or environmental samples should include details of their sampling methodology, analysis, statistical calculations, to ensure the best practices are being adopted and communities are receiving scientifically defensible data. A variety of appropriate activities and resources have been listed in the suggested research and activities document with the link on the website, and the budget for the core cannot exceed $100,000 in direct costs. Next slide, please. So now I'm going to move on to the research support cores, which are optional. So SRP centers may choose to include the research support core with a maximum of two allowed to provide the essential centralized services or resources that will result in economy of effort and or savings to the overall cost of the center. They can also serve as useful tools in promoting interdisciplinary activities and integration of the center's project and cores. When proposed by a center, a research support core must support at least two or more of the research projects. Typical core facilities include laboratory facilities, analytical chemistry, omics support, or analytical equipment and services. A research support core is principally designed as a service or resource component, and it would be highly unusual to include research in the core unless, with a possible exception, would be a methodology development. In addition to the description of the core, with the specific details about the description are included in the RFA, so please turn to that for the additional information. The description should include how the core will be used as a resource to the center as a whole. Discuss ways in which the core centralized services will produce an economy of effort or an overall cost savings compared to their inclusion as each part of the project in the center. The research support cores that provide analytical and quantitative services to the center should include a quality assurance section. The quality assurance section should document a center's policy on implementing and assessing the effectiveness of its quality assurance and quality control operations. Central guidance can be found at the link listed on the screen. Be certain to reference the relevant table of research support and data management and analysis core utilization described in the overall component for those projects that use the core. It's also important that the core describes how the data will be managed and how it will be coordinated with the DMAC. I also want to mention the pros and cons of the research support cores. They provide excellent interactions and integration and opportunities for the center trainees and assurance of quality. The cons are that they may not be critical if the university already has the available facilities that can be utilized and that the applicant needs to stay within the 11 component limit in the application. Also, I wanted to mention, since the research support cards are optional, they do not have a set budget. I will now pass it off to Danielle, who will talk about the research experience and training coordination core and give you some tips before we turn it over to Dr. Laura Thomas, the scientific review officer. Danielle, back to you.
Great. Thank you, Brittany. So the P42 application is also required to include a research experience and training coordination core. And it's a mouthful, so we'll just call it the RESPI from here on out. And that's to coordinate graduate and postdoctoral level cross-disciplinary research experiences and training in fields relating to biomedical research and environmental science and engineering. So in the past RFAs, this was called the training core, but the name was changed also in the last RFA to reflect the true purpose of the core. So please recall that the SRB defines trainees within the program as graduate students and postdoctoral researchers that perform research and activities that are supported by the center. So while undergraduates are recognized as a part of the research continuum and allowed to participate in the core's activities, the core should direct its opportunities primarily to the center's graduate and postdoctoral trainees. The core should be designed to promote interactions between the biomedical and environmental science and engineering trainees. It should provide opportunities to enhance their professional career development, coordinate opportunities for trainee participation in the community engagement core and the administrative core's research translation function. So please note, though, it's not mandatory for trainees to participate in community engagement core and administrative core's research translation function, but it is highly encouraged. It's also there to promote trainee interaction with the data management and analysis core and to provide information about the center's activities and trainees to the SRP. And finally, identify ways to enhance inclusion of trainees from diverse backgrounds. The core should include activities and training opportunities for the center's trainees, which may include tailored curricula development, selected coursework to fulfill degree requirements, cross-disciplinary laboratory experiences, seminar series, journal clubs, workshops, and conferences related to professional development, travel to scientific meetings, and opportunities for mentoring, especially those students of diverse backgrounds. The course should also provide a description of how trainees' activities will be guided and how the trainees' performance will be monitored and evaluated. The course should also indicate its use of the NIH Career Track database. The RESTI should also provide points of contact for regular SRP-hosted student postdoc alumni network, also known as SPAN, Leadership Committee, conference calls, and webinars. And so you can see the link here in the slide. So please be sure to work with your administrative core for roles and responsibilities related to the career track, as well as the data collection tool if you decide to use that to highlight your trainees. So next slide. So please just keep in mind that if you have a renewal application, inquiry and reviewers will want to know about past trainee successes. And this can be included in the trainee list that is required as a part of the RESTI. Next slide, please. I also wanted to remind you all to include authentication of key biological and or chemical resources and biohazards if you're working with hazardous substances. Note that the reviewers do pay attention to these things, so it's best that you not forget them. Please also incorporate rigor and reproducibility into your application in the research strategy and possibly authentication of biological and chemical materials. And you may want to see the review section for details. And note the resource sharing section that NIH requires. That includes the data sharing plan, sharing of model organisms, and genomic data sharing plan. The data sharing plan should include the project core-specific data management plan and for project and investigator-initiated research translation plan. And then next slide, almost pretty much final slide, at least for programmatic staff. So to summarize, as you can imagine, there are many parts to a center, but to be successful, projects and cores need to be uniformly meritorious, demonstrate interaction, address a major problem theme, and aid stakeholders in effective decision making. Again, I cannot stress enough that if you're interested in developing an application, please do not hesitate. One of us as an SRP staff member, we are here to help. So now I'm going to turn this presentation over to Dr. Laura Thomas, and she's going to be our scientific review officer for this RFA. So Laura?
Great. Thank you, Danielle, and thank you everyone who is joining us here today. I know I can't believe that we are here already. I feel like the past couple of years have gone by super quickly, especially 2020. So let me get through this part. Will be pretty rapid. I'm just going to point out some things to highlight that have already been mentioned, but that are definitely things to pay attention to, such as important dates where the letter of intents or LOIs are due January 15th, 1 month later is when the applications are due, and then the council round it is going to is January of the following year, 2022. So as we said, the application due date is February 15th. However, that really means that it's the last call due date. So I've been picturing this like when you're getting on the airplane and they're like the final call, you know, the door is going to close. You are not allowed. Nobody else is allowed on or off the plane, you know, after the door closes. So that's what this February 15th is. So we really, really, really all are going to suggest that you, and most people do this, which is great, is to apply early, put, you know, get your application in so that if any errors get kicked back, it can take a couple days for those to figure out, and you definitely don't want to have spent all that time on your application for it only to get kicked out at the last minute. So when it first comes in, your applications undergo an administrative review. That is something that I do in concert with the SRP program officers, and we make sure that the applications have all of the required components. If they do, they're considered responsive. If they're not, they're considered not responsive. Those that are responsive then go on to the scientific merit review, which, as mentioned earlier, is going to take place in late summer. It's going to be similar to the past two reviews where there's a phase one that's going to be held virtually where all of the projects and cores are discussed, and then phase two, which, you know, we don't know if it's going to be in person. Hopefully, I just knocked on wood, we'll have an in-person review at that time where the top scoring centers will be discussed. And then all applications will receive summary statements for those centers that were not discussed at the in-person review. They will still receive summary statements from all of their projects and cores. Now, a month prior, you have that LOI due. This is in the RFA. And it's not required, but it's highly recommended. Obviously, we in review start very early, as this is our biggest review, and it's a pretty monumental task to get all of the appropriate expertise covered, and the conflicts of interest are just kind of insane. So the earlier we know, the better. So, you know, please send in that LOI, and as program officers have said, and you'll hear again, please have discussions with them. It should not be a surprise to any of us that we receive your application. Having conversations throughout this process with the POs is going to make everything a whole lot better. So the review process, as I said, we review the projects and cores, and then there's also a review of the overall center. In the RSA, you can see the details. I'll just briefly go over. In the project, you have the main, you know, kind of the NIH's big five: review criteria, significance, investigators, innovation approach, environment. And we also have a contribution to the SRP center as another criteria in the other specific review criteria. So it is a score-driving issue for projects. That is also true for cores. Their contribution to the overall center, as well as each core has specific criteria that are germane to it that need to be addressed. For the overall center, in addition to those big five we talked about, we also have an integration of the center. That is an additional review criteria that is the bulk of the discussion for the overall center. So really, I don't need to go in depth about this. Read the RFA. That is where, you know, it is extremely thorough. We have all you know, had our eyes and been working on it for a while. Program has especially. So when in doubt, go to the RFA. Use that Control F function. Look for keywords. If you can't find it, of course, contact, you know, me. If you have issues, program staff, grants management. It's also important to follow the guidelines for page limits, font size, margins. We can't, it's an issue of fairness. If someone has shrunk the font or decreased the margins so that they are then submitting more information, more words in their application, that is not fair to everybody else's application. So please do take great care to abide by those. And again, start the application process early. And again, go to that web page. I mean, the RFA is going to be where the most information is. You can always reach out to me. I will be working, of course, not alone, because this is a huge process, with Sharnice Outen, who's going to be the extramural support assistant on this review, and my boss, the chief of the NIEHS scientific review branch, Alfonso Latoni, who many of you know as well. So feel free to reach out to any one of us. If I don't know the answer, I will find it out for you. So, yes, and that's it. I tried to be quick. I'll pass it off now to Grant Management Chief Jenny Greer.
Thank you, Laura, and thank you everyone for this great presentation today. I am really excited to be here to talk about this funding opportunity, and I'm really going to focus my comments on the budget portion of the application. So we've heard today about how wonderful and complicated this program is, and as a result, the budget will also be somewhat complicated to put together, so we wanted to talk about some of those complexities. But before it feels too terribly daunting, I wanted to reassure you that there are many, many resources available to help you as you're navigating the budget requirements for this program. So first of all, like Heather and Laura and many others today have said, the first place where you're going to look for information is in your funding opportunity announcement. That is the RFA that we've talked about in such detail today. And it has all of the information about the caps, the various caps, the various budgetary requirements, and the components that are required. In addition, because this is a multi-project program, there are many resources available specifically about how to apply for multi-component projects. And so there's a user guide, there's a webinar, and all these links are provided here. And as you're looking at your budget and you're trying to construct your program, you will also want to keep in mind what costs are allowable and unallowable. You'll want to stay abreast of the current salary cap that NIH has posted, and also maybe look at some of the policies in the grant policy statement. Now, do be aware that some of these will change between now and the application date. The salary cap is often changed in January or February, and the NIH grants policy statement will be updated in November of this year. So just be aware of that. So as mentioned, this is a multi-component program, and so that means that you will have to submit a detailed budget rather than a modular budget. And you will have to provide detailed categorical budgets for each project, each core, and each subaward or consortium for each project in each core. One cost that we often see in budgets that come in applications is escalation. And that is when you increase the amount of funding by some small percentage, 2 or 3% for inflation each year. Please note that you can include this in your application. However, NIH and NIEHS does not provide escalation. And so we will remove it from the out years if the grant is funded. That said, if you need additional funds in out years, so for example, say you need $20,000 for materials and supplies in the first year, but in the second year, you're going to ramp up your efforts and you actually need $40,000, those kinds of fluctuations are allowable. However, you do need to provide a strong budget justification that explains why those fluctuations exist. The other main cost that I wanted to point out is the importance of travel. So travel is required for, funds for travel are required in the administrative core budget. So be sure to include that for all years. So when you're looking at your budget preparation, you want to keep in mind that out-year costs, that is, costs after the first year, will be based upon whatever justification you provide at this point, as well as what comes in through the progress report and on the availability of funds. As mentioned previously, you must provide a budget for subawards and consortium, and that those budgets must follow all of the same guidelines as the parent applicant. Keep in mind that the direct costs for the subaward budgets are included in the parent grant subtotal. So, in fact, all of the costs are included in the parent direct cost. So if you have a subawardee of $100,000, of that $80,000 is a direct cost and $20,000 is an FNA cost. That $100,000 is a part of the parent's direct cost. However, the subaward FNA, that $20,000, is not a part of the is not included in the calculation of the cap. Sorry, that maybe wasn't very clear. So only the direct cost from the subawardee count towards the cap of the parent. When you are preparing your budget, in addition to the numbers, which are very important, it is also important that you provide a strong budget justification. And so this is the narrative portion of your application of the budget, and it must match what you have in the budget. So the numbers must add up when we're looking at both together. You've got to include enough information in your budget justification that will enable the grant management staff who will review it to identify whether the costs are reasonable, allowable, and necessary for the successful completion of the project. So if you have, for example, you put in $50,000 for travel, we can't tell just by looking at $50,000 for travel if that is allowable, reasonable, and necessary. However, if you tell us that, for example, if you were going to New York, one person going to New York for $50,000 obviously is not reasonable. But if we had a number of people going on multiple overseas trips, that may be completely reasonable. So when you're looking at your budget justification, please think about it in those terms and give us those kinds of details. How many people are traveling? Where are they going? When you're purchasing supplies, how many units are you purchasing? We need enough detail so that we can understand if it is a reasonable cost. So I want to take some time now to look at the actual budget forms. Hopefully this is visible enough to you to be able to kind of read some of these words. If you've applied for NIH grants before, then this is probably familiar to you. It looks very similar to what you would do for an R01 or another grant. The difference here is the number of these forms that you will actually be filling out for a multi-component project. So here in the top left-hand corner, you will see that there's a yellow box that says organizational DUNS number. So this is right up here. This is where you would put the DUNS number of the organization that is responsible for this particular component. So whatever organization is the lead of this component, you would put their DUNS number right here. In the next line, you see two boxes. You see a project and a subaward. If this is the lead for the component, you would mark the project budget, the project box. If this is a subaward on that component, you would mark the subaward box. So that's a really important distinction to make, so please pay attention when you're doing your budget and make sure that you mark the correct box there. If you have a subawardee that is only going to be working on a project for, say, 2 out of the 5 years, then here in the start date and the end date, you want to make sure that you include the actual dates of the budget period for which they will be working. So for example, if your grant starts in 2022, when it starts in 2022, and your subawardee doesn't start until 2023, that start date would be 2023. So the rest of this form here that we're looking at is all about personnel. And this first section is senior and key personnel. And you want to make sure that you obviously include who they are, what their role is, but please include the base salary and the effort, either in calendar months or in academic plus summer months, and include the requested salary. Please note that we in grants management are going to do the calculations based on the base salary you have there. So please make it so everything adds up. If we find discrepancies, things don't add up either in the budget pages or between the budget pages and the budget justification, we're going to come back to you with questions. And that's just going to take more time later on in the process. So please review everything and make sure there aren't any of these discrepancies. Please note that you can have up to 100 people under senior and key personnel. If there are more, then you will have to upload an additional attachment. All right. So this is just kind of explaining what I just went over and the narrative forms for you all to have later on. The next part of the budget form that you will see is the section C through E. And first is section C focuses on equipment. Please keep in mind that equipment is defined as anything that has a purchase price of $5,000 or more and a useful life of at least 1 year. So please don't put a laptop for $500 in your equipment section. And if you do that, the challenge that we then have is when everything is imported into our system, that will be removed from your F&A base. So please try only to put equipment in there, things that actually meet that threshold of $5,000. Section D is where you will include the mandatory travel and any other travel. Please note that it's separated between domestic and foreign travel costs. Section E here is a section that people often include. Please, please, please do not put anything in this section. This is for training grants only. The P42 is not a training grant. So even if you have a graduate student on the program and they are getting tuition or maybe a stipend or some kind of subsistence, please don't put anything in this section. It does not go here. So moving on to the last part of the budget form that you will fill out, section F is the section for other direct costs. This is where you put in your materials and supplies and publications and consultants. It is important to note that number 5 under section F is subawards and consortium contractual costs. This does not automatically calculate for you. So please calculate that and enter it. This should include the direct and the indirect costs for the subawardee. And it should be a conglomeration. So if there are 3 subs, then it should be all of those totaled up together. Please check your math to make sure that whatever number you put here matches the budget pages that you provide for those subs. You may see right here in this section there are 3 blank lines. This is for other direct costs that aren't itemized here. So if you have tuition for a graduate student, this is where you would put that information or any other cost that's not in one of the other categories. The next section is section G, which calculates automatically. It will calculate all of the direct costs together. In section H, you want to include your F&A rate and the base. The base is found here, and if you have any exclusions to the base, you will want to include that in your justification. So it's very clear what was excluded from your base. Please leave section J blank. You do not get a fee on this project. And section K here at the bottom is where you will upload your budget justification. Again, I ask that you please review your budget justification and your budget to make sure that all of it matches. All right, so then at the very end, once you've put all of that information in, then you will see a page that looks like this. This is a cumulative budget, and it adds everything all together on its own. You don't have to do anything here, but it's a great way to check your work. So if you look at this total amount down here at the bottom, and it does not add up to what you think you were asking for the 5 years, then there's a math error somewhere, and please go find it and correct it so that you end up requesting the amount that you actually think you're requesting. So I wanted to talk, so that's kind of the process for the budget. There are lots of pieces to it. There are lots of resources available, as I mentioned at the beginning. But I wanted to take just a second and talk about what would happen next. So for example, you submit your application, it goes through review, and you see a summary statement score, and you think it's a pretty good score and has a good likelihood of being funded. I want to emphasize to you how important it is for you to start getting your paperwork in place. If you are proposing to do work that includes vertebrate animals or human subjects research, then you will be required at the time of a funding determination is made to submit your IACUC approval and your IRB approval. Both of these can take months to complete and to obtain. And so we ask you at the time of application is when you really should start looking for that, when you really should start putting in your protocols to get that process going. But at the very least, at the moment when you get a summary statement score and you feel like it's looking pretty positive, please start your process so that by the time we are looking at your application and we're getting ready to make an award, you already have all that in place, because we cannot make an award without an IACUC or an IRB in place. The other thing that we will ask for at that time, and we call this the just-in-time process, where we ask you to submit some additional information just in time to receive an award. The other thing that we will ask for at this time that often causes us challenges is the other support document. And the other support document, as many of you already know, is the document where you describe all of your activities, all of the projects that you're working on. And you have to include there how much effort you are expending on each of those projects. And what we cannot accept is anything that says that you're not expending any effort, or anything that says it varies or is as needed. Because what we're trying to do is calculate how much effort you are expending to make sure that the total doesn't exceed 12 calendar months. Because as we all know, there are only 12 calendar months in a year, and we want to make sure that you are not trying to do 13 or 14 months worth of work in only 12 months. And that's our responsibility in grants management. So please give us the information that we need on your other support documents so that we can confirm that you are really only trying to work 12 months in 12 months. So I'm kind of going to end my presentation here, kind of back where we started with resources. We've gone through so much information today, all of us, and there are a lot of questions that you probably have and many that you will have as you are going through the process. So please avail yourself of the resources. This listing has a few additional resources, including a bio sketch format and guidance on rigor and reproducibility. We are also providing for you here links to the ERA Commons and the Commons Help Desk. So if you get into technical problems, you're trying to submit that application and are not able to do so, please do not hesitate to reach out to the Commons Help Desk and get some help from them. And thank you for your time, and good luck in this wonderful opportunity. And I will pass it over now to Bill. Bill, if you are speaking, we can hear.
I had to unmute. Okay, there I am. Okay, sorry about that. I was listening. I just turned it off. Okay. Okay, so this has been, shall we say, very informative, but also a very detailed explanation of things about this program. But I want to thank you for your attention during this funding opportunity seminar. I would like to leave you with two final thoughts. First, as was told, submit early. You are given a window of 3 days to correct errors. If you wait until the last minute, you will lose the opportunity to correct errors, and your application could be rejected by the system for issues that could have been fixed earlier. So, you know, get in early. The other part is, we are here to help you during this process. We encourage you to reach out if you are contemplating submitting an application. Especially if you have not already been in touch with any of the folks listed in this slide. In general, the program officers listed here, Danielle, Michelle, and Heather, are good first point of contact and can direct your questions to the right person. We are all here to help you and encourage you to reach out. The success of this program is based on the solid NIH peer review system that we have enjoyed for the past 30 plus years. We base our decisions, I'm getting ahead of myself, on the technical merit of the application. We also look at program relevance and research gaps we're trying to fill, as well as obviously the availability of funds. But those are the issues that you have to look at. So again, I ask that you reach out to us. Have any questions? We will help you. We're here. The last slide, please. There we go. So with that, I would like to acknowledge the behind-the-scenes webinar gurus who have made today's webinars possible, including the folks at CLUIN, who have generously shared their web seminar format for us. At this time, we will open the lines for questions moderated by Sarah. Thank you again, and good luck.
Thank you, Bill. So this is Sarah. I will be going through some of the questions that we have seen come through. Just a quick reminder that you may submit questions using the Q&A pod that you see in the lower right-hand corner. We've gotten quite a few questions, so we are going to take them from the Q&A pod. So if you have a question, please make sure to submit that now. The first question, since February 15th is a holiday, will the deadline fall to February 16th?
Sarah, this is Heather. I can take that question. So whenever an assigned due date falls on a federal holiday, that application is actually due on the next day. So case in point, February 15th is President's Day, which is a federal holiday. So the application would be due the next day.
Great. And while I have you, Heather, another question. Does biohazards need to be a separate section, or can it be part of the authentication of key biological and or chemical resources section?
Thanks, Sarah. I always double check the actual SF-424 guidelines anytime a specific question like that comes up. The instructions refer to the facilities section as a place to mention biohazard handling. It also makes sense to include some information in that authentication of key biological and chemical resources. So always go by what's in the SF-424. Thanks, Sarah.
Great, thanks. And related to that, can the authentication of key biological and or chemical resources section for DMAC and admin cores simply cross-reference this information provided for the research projects? Or is it more information needed in this section, and that's the DMAC and admin core section?
That is a good question. It's always a great idea to cross-reference sections. You know, then beyond that, I would say, you know, use your best judgment if the authentication of biological or chemical resources is really central to some aspect of what the DMAC or the admin core is doing, then they probably would want to include that in the DMAC or admin core. It just depends on the focus of that group. But it is fine to cross-reference if it's going to be reasonably understandable that the DMAC or admin core are not the lead or that activity is not central to what that core is doing.
Great, thank you. A quick question on director effort. Somebody mentioned that you commented on director must commit a minimum of 1.8 person months. Can you clarify what you mean by that?
I wonder if Jenny there. Might.
Oh, Jenny?
So I was not the one who was speaking up. I do not see anything in the RFA that talks about efforts. I think that's a programmatic question.
This is Michelle. Can you hear me okay, Sarah?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so sorry if I misspoke when I was mentioning that. So what we want is the center director is meant to include 1.8 months out of the 12 months to being the director of the Superfund program. Center.
Great. Okay. A question related to the DMAT course. This can go to you, Michelle. Could you offer guidance on how much of the budget to allocate for this core, as quite a lot of responsibilities are listed? What are the typical allocations from past applications, or can you comment at all on DMAT core budget?
I couldn't necessarily comment on budget, but what I can do is direct you to our website. On our website, we've listed what some of the activities of those who have a DMAC within their center, they list what their activities are. So have a look at that. But then to also add a little bit to say, intentionally, we didn't put a cap on the DMAC because it can be quite a strong integrator within a center. And as we were presenting that, we mentioned things like DMAT can also fold in activities such as bioinformatics as part of the responsibilities of a DMAT, because we're looking to, that core is looking to manage and analyze the data. So for that reason, we didn't put a cap on it. So I would advise you, as you see it fit for the activities that you're proposing to fit to meet the aims within your center, that's sort of what you'd be looking for.
Okay, thanks. Next question. Are past trainee successes required for new submissions by old programs going back in, but not a renewal?
So this is Danielle. I'll take that question. My suggestion is that if you have that information, that you may still want to at least give the reviewers a sense on, you know, what sort of past trainee successes. You might not need to go into all the full detail because you do have a so-called new application. But, you know, you might have those reviewers that are familiar that, you know, then past, you know, you've had a center. So I certainly don't think it'll do it much harm. You don't want to take up too much valuable space either, but it certainly would be probably to your best interest to at least recognize some of the great things that if you've had a center in the past that you still might want to try to highlight that.
Great. Thanks, Danielle. And I just want to let everyone know we are about to hit 3 p.m. We are going to continue with the questions. If you do have to drop off, this webinar will be recorded and the archive will be available. So you will be able to go back and listen to the answers to the additional questions if you are not able to stay. And again, thanks to the presenters for sticking around for a few extra minutes. Another question, can we have a discussion with program staff about relevancy? If so, when should we contact program staff about that? Should that be sooner rather than later?
I was going to say either maybe Heather or I could take that. It's fine.
I think the answer everyone would say is to contact sooner rather than later.
Agreed.
Okay, great. Jenny, do grantees need full IRB approval or just the date of approval?
So we do not ask you to submit the copy of the entire IRB approval. All we need is the date. It comes in through just in time. But if you have a date, that means you have full IRB approval. You definitely need to make sure that that date is associated with an IRB approval that matches what's in the grant policy statement and meets those criteria. So it can't be conditional. It can't be for just one portion of the project. You need an entire IRB approval that covers all of the human subjects activities that will be conducted under the project.
Great, thank you. Next question, the PIs receive feedback after they submit the letter of intent?
This is Laura, the scientific review officer. I will respond to you and let you know that we received your letter of intent. If it is missing any information, I will, you know, ask you for that. But as to content of the LOI, you do not receive any feedback on that. Again, as has been said before, you need to be talking with the POs early and often. So, you know, for things like relevancy of content, you will need to talk with the POs about that prior to submitting.
Okay, thanks. Are collaborative aims also allowed for CEC, or are they only allowed between projects? So I'll direct that to Brittany.
Sure. Yes, collaborative aims are allowed for the CEC, and we actually encourage collaborative aims.
Great, thank you. So next question, just a confirmation question. All tuition, stipends, and participant costs should go in projects and cores under other, not, but they are allowable.
So from a grants management perspective, I can say that in general, tuition is an allowable expense on federal grants. And yes, we do not want anything going in that section E. It should go under the project and course. I will leave it to program to notice if tuition is acceptable under this specific program.
Okay, great, thank you. There were a couple of questions related to collaborations among different institutions. For example, if an institution doesn't have a specific doctoral program, do you have any suggestions for how to go about collaborating with other institutions or finding campuses that may want to collaborate?
So, Sarah, I can try to take that question. You know, honestly, I think if you don't have a program, you're going to have to be creative and reach out to those that you want to collaborate with and see if they have a program that's available. I mean, I think if you want to talk further, we can certainly talk offline, but that's such a broad question. I'm not even quite sure how to completely answer other than to, you know, you'll have to do your homework.
Okay, thank you. Another question which relates to that is, I think it's related to cross-center collaboration, so between different SRP centers. Are these collaborations encouraged for specific projects, and how should these be treated in the application?
So I don't know, maybe either Heather wants to try to take that. I mean, I can take sort of the first stab because it's related to projects. Again, I think that's something that you might want to talk with us about because, again, without kind of knowing the specifics of what you're thinking of, you know, just to let you know that if you are successful, we do offer a training opportunity called the Casey Donnelly Externship, and that is where, you know, a trainee can go and work at another Superfund center for, you know, a few weeks, a few months at a time. So there's that potential opportunity, but as far as collaborations within projects, I think you might want to talk with SRP staff so we can talk more in detail. Heather, is there anything I might have missed?
No, I think you covered it well. Thanks, Danielle.
Great, thanks. Another question is to clarify the 1.8-month effort for the director. Just to confirm, does that need to be funded through the SRP budget? Or if there is institutional support to incorporate that, will provide part of the 1.8-month effort committed to SRP.
So I'll take a stab at that. Sure. And Jenny, if you're still on, you can correct me if I've got this wrong, but it's 1.8 person's month. It's the level of effort and commitment, but you can get the support if you have it through your institution. But Jenny, if I've got that wrong, please go ahead.
So I would just add to that. I think that that's absolutely correct. The one thing that you want to be very clear of in your application is that it's clear how much effort you will be putting on this grant, even though even if it's not showing the budget, because that's typically the place where we see a PI showing what effort they will be expending. So make sure you put it in your budget justification that there's 1.8 calendar months of effort, but no salary being requested or whatever. Just make sure it's very clearly stated there so that we can understand that that requirement is being met.
Right. We want to make sure the person is committed.
And related to that, the next question is related to that very thing. Is matching by the institution, although it's not needed, would it be advantageous to highlight the commitment of the institution?
So I would say that when we see the applications, it needs to be clear, you know, especially to the reviewers, that the institution's behind your application. This is a highly collaborative, P42s are highly collaborative. You're often collaborating across many schools within an institution and sometimes across institutions. So just making it clear that the institution's aware and supports your application, because it's likely to involve sharing of, you know, resources and making sure that this collaboration and integration can be facilitated. So as it for it being advantageous, you're not required to get that funds, but you are required, you do need to see that you do have your institutional support behind that. If anyone else would like to weigh in, please go ahead.
Correct.
Great, thank you. A quick question about if a subcontractor is the lead of a project, but a member of the institution, the prime institution of the center, plays a paid role in that project, how is that presented in the budget?
So this is Jenny. I'll take this question. This should be presented, so you should do a budget for the grantee organization. Or the applicant, the main applicant, and put that paid person on that budget, and then do a sub-budget to that original. And in that one, you would list the person who is leading up that as the project lead, and you would put all of the budget information for the sub-awardee. Because you've got to remember that even if an organization is a lead on a project or component, they are still a sub-awardee to the grantee institution. So you're absolutely right. You would not want to make a sub back to the grantee. You just put the paid person under their organization and then do a sub to that.
Great, thanks. This is kind of a general question that came up related to access to hazardous waste sites. How might researchers go about accessing hazardous waste sites? Would they contact if you want to comment on that at all.
So this is Danielle, just because I guess it kind of deals maybe more with the project. I'll take it. You know, again, I'm sorry to have to sound like a broken record, but, you know, doing your homework and reaching out and making those connections. I know that on our website we offer a lot of resources regarding both, you know, EPA and APSDR contacts, so there's like your regional contacts. Maybe that might be a good first step. You know, we really try to, I think just maybe making that first contact with those regional, or even maybe there's community groups that might be affected by different hazardous, by different sites affected by hazardous substances, and that would be probably, again, another first step. But I think if you're, again, if you're interested in applying, maybe also just reaching out to us, and we can provide further information offline. So maybe Heather or Michelle want to add to that?
Okay. We just have a couple more questions, and I think these are a couple of clarification questions from some of the other questions that came up, and then we'll wrap up. So the first one is the question related to collaboration about with another SRC. If this is encouraged, if the distinct expertise are leveraged to enhance impact toward the mandates of the Superfund program. In an application, each center's budget may include covering the research expertise. But my question is whether such cross-center collaborations are encouraged. I guess they're speaking specifically, do you want to hear about cross-center collaborations in the application?
Sarah, this is Danielle again. I think maybe we already answered that question, but just to, again, I think reiterate, I think it's best that you reach out to us so we can discuss any specifics about an application.
And this is Heather. Maybe I'll just jump in and say that one of the aspects of the Research Translation Corps is to talk about coordinating with other SRP centers. So there is a place to talk about that. If not as part of the project, it would also be part of research translation. So I'll just add that one little point.
Okay. Another really quick question, just for clarification, would a institution be eligible to apply if they don't currently have a center?
Yes, one application per institution is in the RFA, so that's a rule in the RFA. So if your institution does not have a center, then yes, you would be eligible to apply.
Great. I think that's all I'm seeing here. I just want to confirm program staff, if you want to make any additional comments related to the subawardee question on whether the component can be led by a subawardee.
So this is Danielle. I'll try to attempt that question. I think, yes, I have seen, so for example, if you're at an institution and you want to have a project lead that's located at another institution, then you would have a subaward most likely made to that other institution so that that person could be a project or a core lead. So maybe either Heather or Jenny or anybody else want to correct me if I'm wrong.
So this is Jenny, and from a grants management perspective, it is allowable. We see that all the time on project grants. So if that's different in this program, it's a programmatic question.
No, it sounds to me like the exact same, so that it's allowable.
Okay, great. I think that is all I have on my end. So any final comments from program staff or Jenny or Laura before we wrap up?
So I actually see one more question here that I wanted to address. This is Jenny. The question was, could you please clarify what was said about the subawardee indirect costs not counting towards the overall direct cost cap? And I did want to address that because I think that's relevant to many here. So if you, when you're looking at your budget, you've entered all of your budget data in, you will see a total amount of direct costs for the applicant organization. In that number, it will include all of the subaward costs. It will include the subaward direct costs. It will include the subaward indirect costs. However, when we are calculating the cap, we will only count the subaward direct costs. We will exclude the subaward indirect costs. So I hope that clarifies.
Thank you, Jenny. Okay. So at that point, I think we have finished answering the questions. So before we conclude, I did want to make sure everyone is aware of the related URLs pod, and that's to the right of your screen that you should see now. It contains additional resources and seminar feedback links. The related links tab on the seminar page includes a PDF of the slides that were given today, as well as links to the RFA and the SRP funding opportunities page. These links will stay with the seminar indefinitely, so you can access it after the presentation. So that's where you'll be able to get a copy of the PDF of the slides. We place these seminars in an archive with the soundtrack. So in the near future, you will also be able to access the slides and hear the presentation as it was given today.
I would like to remind participants of the various ways to stay connected to ensure you don't miss any webinars. For more information on the EPA's CLUIN webinars, please refer to cluin.org. You can also subscribe to the free monthly e-newsletter TechDirect and follow CLUIN on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. We also encourage you to visit the SRP webpage for more information about upcoming webinars, as well as the SRP research brief page to read about research coming out of the program. You may also follow SRP on Twitter. To conclude, with that, it's time to conclude today's webinar. If you submitted an online question and we did not have time to get to it, we will take a look and follow up. If you have program-specific questions that come up after you've participated in this webinar, we do encourage you to follow up with program staff. Our email addresses are on the seminar homepage on CLUIN.